When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Wow. Just sitting here listening to this. Well, I'd just like to say this is the farewell tour for Trevor today. We're gonna miss him. We got a.
Oh, don't be like that.
We're gonna replace him with Aldis.
hey, okay. Yeah, I know that's a rib.
We need the ratings. So speaking of ratings, is Aaron with us today?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I am. Hello, Terrace.
Oh.
Seeker of truth and knowledge.
Yes.
Always.
Jack,
always.
How are you?
I'm good, man. Yeah. I'm good.
Good, good. And how is our good friend Tyra?
You know, man, I'm maintaining, sifting through that's all we can do. All right, man. So today we've got 30 seconds with Heath at some point, and he's going to be too busy to talk to us, as always. And then awesome. You guys know him as Scion, but obviously we will not mention Scion on the radio. But Robert Ridardi, he is our special guest because this time I made sure to screen the guests to make sure that when they left wrestling, they had a good job. So,
at least a plan.
At least
right?
a plan,
that's,
yes.
That's the message.
Hopefully we're recording now because... Yeah, good.
I did notice none of us pushed that show. Like, none of us really were like, hey, we did it. Yay. Yeah.
Possibly the saddest podcast ever, which is great if you're a sad podcast, but we're not. It was the exact opposite of what we were supposed to do. The only thing we didn't do was walk him out in the backyard and shoot him afterwards because he literally sounded like he had the most miserable existence in the history of man. I mean,
if we can teach anybody anything,
yes.
We can teach them to have a plan.
You got
to
have a plan.
When they leave professional wrestling.
Or you're asked to leave.
You're right.
You know, whatever
right.
the case yes. may be. The have plan a- cannot be, oh, I didn't have one. I don't know. I just, you know, sold my house and took that money and bought another one. Then I sold that one. Oh, you're flipping houses. No.
Nope.
Not doing that.
Okay.
All right. Well, I guess that's it then. Thanks for coming on.
There was a punchline in there somewhere.
Just, yeah. When you're one of the greatest talkers of all time, that's shocking.
Yeah, but now when you look back at him, now it's like it's kind of like one of those things where it's like Step Brothers, where at first it was funny, the two of them in the tuxedos, and then after you get around them, now all of a sudden it's kind of f***ed up when you listen to the stuff they're saying back then. Now you look at the promos and go, ooh, why didn't I see that before? Yeah. That happens to all of us, though. Whenever you spend time with a hero, and then one day some kid will be like, "Yeah, man, I met Tyrus. Boy, wow, that was wow."
You know what? That's a great theme for this pod, like this show. Never meet your heroes.
Because, no. Man. Yeah, I mean, think about it.
I heard that mm-hmm. before too. If you have a hero, that's the last thing you want to do is meet him.
Well, yeah. it seems like we catch them always at their worst moment.
Right.
You know. Well, that's why they're like meeting you. They're no longer top dog because if they were, they wouldn't be f-ing around with any of us. They'd be like, "Yeah, I don't have time for one chunky buff guy, one chubby guy, one guy who can't see, and another guy who's got 9,000 different
My
personalities."
My vision's getting better. It's getting. I like to tell myself.
You know, the
that.
Good news is when you say pick that up, everybody in the room bends down because they don't know where the hell you're looking. So.
It's getting better.
Oh my gosh!
Aren't you glad you came up from Jersey for this?
Yes, sir.
You guys can't tell I'm in a mood
I'm
today.
I'm facing all truth.
I'm in a mood. I'm literally daring Robert not to have a good story. I am not gonna. It'll be gloves off today, you know, because we're learning here at Three Wise Men. And yes, we're no longer the Three Wise Men. We are more than three, but that's why it's a question mark in the end of it. At least one of us is stupid. So we're going to see who's the dumb guy today. And that, you know what? That might be an award for the day. Who was the dumbest wrestler at the end of each show? So, I mean, Aaron, you got something to strive for. So,
I have to work to be dumb because, as we know, I'm a little more intelligent than the average person. I mean, let's just, again,
you keep,
calling it
as long as you believe it, it doesn't matter. As long as you believe it, you see it, believe it. Hey, Honky Tonk Man said he was the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time. Clearly was not, but
but you know what?
We all believe
it. Forever Intercontinental Champion.
Wait a minute, Kevin?
No, sir. Nope. I, you know what? I spent 10 years in that company. I don't have one title.
I held tag team championship with Kofi in Brazil for two nights because R-Truth broke his foot. But what was frustrating for me was the Colognes beat us in the first match.
Right.
And then they gave us an automatic rematch. And then we beat them. So technically at that point, my tag title reign with Kofi should have began.
Right.
But, you know, politics being what it is, you know, somehow Truth managed to. Maybe it was the Jimmy thing. I don't know. But, you know, he was able to maintain his tag team championship.
So. I had a decent run at the United States title against Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's a superstar right there.
Yeah, I chased Dolph, too. Yeah. I chased Dolph. Couldn't catch him. He's wiggly that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and if you're not paying attention, you get sex pinned by him. That's the last,
which
thing you want.
In this day and age.
Nobody wants that. No one wants a sex pin.
No.
If you're gonna, I would rather tap out, to be honest with you. I'd rather tap out. If I even feel it coming, I'm tapping.
I'm going to be honest with you, though. As one of your friends, I do. I would like to see that, just watch it happen and watch your reaction.
It won't be good. And chances are I will blow I will blow that spot. I'm
as
kicking out.
Who's been and I'm going to shut my mouth.
As a guy who's been humped by a 500-pound man on national TV, I think I...
Oh, that's right. You and Big Vist.
Yeah.
Hey, please tell us that story because it always gets better because you get more embarrassed every time you tell it. So please share the story. First of all, Big Vist was one of the most gracious WWE superstars that I had ever come across. He never met a new guy he didn't like. He never...
Gentle giant.
He never... And he was had a lot of wisdom and he had a way about him to where, a lot like Godfather, he didn't let the business eat him up. And it can, and you'll see a lot of guys who've been in, who've put their time in and have to start getting younger guys ready that are not always in the best of moods about it. And
he
I can't
never bitter.
I can't say ever.
All the time about him being bitter, ever.
Nope. And I had my fair share of rub-ins with, you know, guys who saw this big smart ass coming up and didn't want to do anything. And I remember he just said, hey, man, if you weren't great, they wouldn't care. So obviously you're doing something right. So they're noticing. He just had a better way of looking at every situation. And he treated everybody the same. I don't think whether you were the top guy or you were literally the guy who was sweeping up the after the arena, Big Vist said hello. So going into that. And now
he was the first guy that I got to, like when I first came into, sorry to interrupt, to come into WWE, I didn't know anybody. And Harley had brought him in for a couple shows. And I walked into my first Raw in awe, still a mark, still, you know, just a young guy trying to make an opportunity. And he was the first guy to be like, you know, hey, Trevor, come over here. You know what I mean? And like sat me down and, you know, said, hey, I'll help you out in any way I can. You know, you're not here by yourself. And that was that, you know, for a young guy coming into business, not knowing really what's going on, that was a huge relief for me to know that I had somebody in my corner like that.
Yeah. You always remember those people too, right? And, you know, Handsome Heath was one of those people for me that, you know, you kind of, like you said, you're a mark, right? When I got in the business, I was a huge mark to it, and walking around, and I remember even wanting to take pictures with some of the guys, and they had to come up to me and say, you know, Kev, Alex, I got some heat for that, I got some actually major heat, and they were like, Kev, even you know, someone at management said, you know, you belong here, we hired you, just, you know, chill out, fit in, right? But yeah, I remember those people kind of coming up to me. Yeah,
I think. And looking back on it, man, there was nothing wrong with being a fan.
Yeah.
And if you were in the NFL and you walk by and here's Tom Brady, you're going to say, hey, you mind if I get a I want to be like you.
Yeah,
I look up
to you. Exactly, right.
Yeah. So, you know, sometimes people, their own insecurities kind of show out, you know, and that's the one thing people don't realize about sports or even simulated combat sports like the one that we've all danced in for so long is that position is everything. And guys will fight for there's no dirty trick they won't play to hold on to their spot. And and you get it because it goes back to that whole plan B. Right. A lot of guys don't have a plan. They're going to wrestle until their wheels come off.
Yeah.
And they don't realize that that's not statistically, it's just like the NFL. You get drafted by the NFL, it's like the greatest thing in the world and your whole life's changed. 2 years into it, you could be done.
Yeah.
You know, and then, then you got the rest of your life to think about it. And a lot of times, men especially, I think, more than women, I don't know what you guys think, don't seem to have – we get caught up in the moment and what's in front of us. We don't always look down the road.
Especially we think it's going to last forever.
When you leave a sport like that, you know, your brain – or any sport, rather – your brain requires almost rewiring because you have to be so focused to do anything at the top level.
Yeah.
And – you know, where it has to consume a large portion of who you are. So, again, having a plan B, it is, of course, the right thing to do.
Yeah, it's almost when you're, you know, in any sport. I mean, and I was played college football and then into, you know, WWE and sports entertainment. This is the truth. The real world is a tiny bit slower. Right. When you leave it, there's an adjustment space that you have to, like you said, shift into. And sometimes it's a hard thing. You know, it's a hard transition to make because of the adrenaline. You know what I mean? You're out there in front of 20,000 people. And you're right. Sometimes not having a backup plan, if that's your state of mind, will help you because you love what you're doing. You know, you yes. love what you're doing. I remember saying, you know, in college, telling one of my coaches, he looked me dead in the eye. I said, look, I'm going to the NFL. You know what I mean? And there is nothing else. And it kind of took that level of, you know, discipline, dedication to get me there. Obviously, I didn't, right? And I became a WWE superstar. But there is something to be said for, hey, this is my life, and you're not going to take it from me. And nobody is. And I think that leads to you know, a better state of competition for everybody. But as you become a man, you know, and you get older, you can't be an athlete forever, right? And I think that's the message. Like, if you're going to pursue athletics, if you're going to pursue entertainment or professional wrestling, sports entertainment, that, you know, as you age, you can't be an athlete forever, and you got to have some other things to fall back on.
Oh, that's a great point.
Not everyone can age like me either. So
correct.
If you plan on
more
doing
truth,
age, look,
oh
you have
God.
A bunch of your time.
Is there an extra big mirror around you lately?
You know what? There happens to be. Because I'm at the Heels facility where we're working out. And
I noticed how he got that in. You guys noticed how he got that
no,
in?
No, no. Actually, I don't think I said that.
The Heels,
but where we have these movable mirrors. And let me tell you something. Life is good.
You shouldn't talk about people like that. They're humans. They're not movable mirrors.
You're right. Sorry.
Dick move. Aaron.
Anyways, we digress. Let's plan B.
Oh man, plan B is not just a pill anymore.
It's a real thing.
It's a real thing.
But we all have to prepare for
it. But we're not above being sponsored by it. So,
right.
Hey, yeah. I'll be the first.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah. I love my friends, but my best friend in the world is my good old plan B.
You know what? I should be the poster child for plan B because I don't need to breathe.
You are the poster child for what happens when you don't have plan B. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes.
The world does not need another me.
No, not even a little bit. Speaking of doesn't need somebody, do we have Heath available? Not yet? All right, of course not.
Guy's busy.
Yeah. Speaking
super
of the devil.
Busy.
He's still preparing for his 30 seconds?
He's Heath.
He's on the go.
He's on. He's one of the. You know, it's funny. He's like, I only got 30 seconds, but he can get at least 17 talking points in 30 seconds or less.
So he has planned
title shot.
Andy.
Yeah, he had a title shot in last time. He checked on everybody individually. He shared a moment with everybody.
Yep.
Said, I don't know you, Trevor, but nice to meet you. And then he says, all right. And then answered some questions, and he was gone.
And I'm gone.
Hey, baby. Yeah,
oh, there he is.
Man, I was hearing y'all. I didn't know how to try to unmute this thing. I didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, well, that's good, though, man. How are you? Last week,
brother,
you were coaching football. What are you doing today?
Hey, brother, get this crap, man. last week, we actually won our game. So I was pumped. My daughter scored a touchdown. It was awesome. You know, she's kicking ass. It was so good. There ain't no playoffs.
What?
It's like, oh, you
no
have
playoffs.
Well, you mean, yeah, playoffs to go to the championship. You ever heard of that?
Yeah, they don't have one?
No. And it blew my mind. So we have two first-place teams, and I'm literally sitting there like, how can you have two first-place teams? Like,
you can't.
Exactly, you can't. So they all giving out all these participation trophies. Like, oh, good job, kids. What the hell? Participation trophy is getting out of line, man. You get a trophy when you win.
Thank you.
Just showing up. But yes. It's like, I don't understand this. But anyway, I'm literally about to get on the phone with the commissioner, me and Coach Drew, and talk to see if we can damn have a playoff game between the two number one teams. And then next thing you know, like, we're on hold forever. So he hangs up. I got on here with you, so I'm about to get off here with you guys so I can get back on there and see if we can do an exhibition playoff game.
Well, best of luck, man.
Yeah, man,
exhibition playoff game? Is that even a thing?
It is a thing, Aaron. Shut up. Why are you going to ruin it? Heath's a guest. Why would you do that? Heath, I'm sorry.
I love Heath. Heath, love you, man.
He's already gone.
Where's he gone?
And that's it.
Oh. You upset him. 30 seconds with Heath, ladies and gentlemen. And
hey,
Aaron.
Guys, hey, you there?
Oh, there he is. He's back.
Hey.
Sorry. Hey, whoever said that, one, you can kiss my ass. Two,
me. Baby. You stayed at my parents' house. How dare you?
Go get it, Heath. Go get it.
30 seconds with
like
Heath.
Drive by right there. Just a yeah, drive
hey,
by.
But I'm telling you, he says more than 30 seconds than you guys do in damn near an hour. Just want to put that out there.
It's like depends pulling who your major teeth. Guest is.
Yeah, what is up with there's participation trophies now?
Yeah. What, yeah. Trevor, you got. You with your son, man. And your son is does very well in baseball.
Yes.
And how do you navigate that? Yeah. Because there is no participation awards in the real world.
I'm pretty honest with him. Like, he's brought them. Like, he's gotten them from baseball, and you know, I see the look on his face where he would prefer have won whatever the situation was to be a winner. You know what I mean? But I'm pretty forward with him and honest, because that's how the world's going to be with him. When he goes out, no one's going to be as nice as we are to our kids. And they're not going to care about our kids the way we care about them. So I was just honest with him. And I said, you know, did you want to win? He goes, yeah. Did you win? No. Well, then, son, there's a lot of lessons to learn when you're losing. Just because they gave you a trophy doesn't mean that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just upfront and honest with him. And I've learned way more lessons in my losses than I have in my wins.
Right.
You know what
I
mean?
I think everyone who's being real with themselves would agree with that. You know, we're living a time where I just read, I was prepping for Gutfeld, and there was a story on there where, and it kind of ties into this, where these young adults, the Generation Z or whatever the hell it is, they don't want phone calls at work. They're too stressful to hear people, to have to talk to people. So they want everyone to send emails or text messages because they get too stressed having to answer phone calls.
Hey, isn't that, you know, and that's, I remember when I must have been 22 or the first time I got a text message. And I think it was either right out of college or right around there or right in college. And I was offended.
Yeah.
It was from one of my best friends growing up. And I said, what is this? Why don't you, you know, if we're friends and we've known each other our whole life, why would you not just pick up the phone and call me? And now it has switched,
yep.
Which I think is so fascinating by the way we all, you know, consciously or subconsciously are communicating with each other. It's nobody picks up the phone to call each other anymore.
No, and if you do, you have to text. You mind if I give you a call?
Yeah, and it's to me.
Trevor did that to me the other day.
Crazy.
He was like, hey,
yeah.
Mind if I call you? Just text me.
And now people are offended. They could be in your family.
Yeah.
And you try to call them on the phone and they click it off. And what you get is a text. Why are you calling me?
Yeah.
And it's so, to me, from, you know, from my generation, I think we're all in the same generation. It's like a split understanding where we're used to, you know, I'm used to somebody. If they respect me, if they love me, if they need to hear my voice, you pick up the phone and you call. But now it really has shifted. So,
you know, the only thing I would say is if you're calling your fiance and she's telling you why you're calling, text me.
Right.
There might be some red flags there. But I agree with you.
For me, it comes down to the situation. Like, there's a lot of times, like, between my wife and I, when it comes to communication, like, you don't quite get across what you need to, whether it be positive or negative in a text.
You absolutely don't. Yeah.
Because they attach feelings to your text.
That's right. And those, and then sometimes a normal text of what you're trying to, you know, whether you're happy comes across as hateful or angry to them. And there's this whole miscommunication and you're having an argument about something that's pointless and could have totally been avoided if you'd have just took the 5 seconds to call them and say, hey, listen, I was thinking about this. And it totally changes the mindset of the, you know what I mean? Of
right.
The person you're
there's way too much to interpret through the written word, right? I mean, we need to get back to picking up the phone and
literally
calling each other.
When people get offended if you say the word ass, but if you replace it with but, They're right. fine with it. It's the same right. thing.
Yeah.
Oh, but it's a dirty word. There's no such thing as dirty words. They're just dirty thoughts you put on words.
Right.
Based on
that's kind of how, I mean, yeah, and like it has kind of led to a more impersonal society to where, like, even now, like there's this weird sense of autonomy, even in the field of public service. And public service, I'm talking about like anytime you're dealing with the public, like at the hotel I'm staying at.
Of course, the you person tell that
checked
that.
Me in. What's that?
Nothing.
No. The person that checked me in had earbuds in, and right. like I was wanting to deal with an issue, and like it's like they didn't even care. You know what I mean? They were. Just
they didn't have
to
the pleather
and,
pillow.
Like,
yeah. How about
no,
for?
No,
how
no,
about,
no, no, no. It's not that kind of a hotel. No, no, they don't. They don't do that.
How about for the last 2 years?
Wi-Fi are not allowed at that hotel.
Yeah. How about for the last two or 3 years? We have masks on our faces and our faces in cell phones.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I could not believe yeah. it. I was looking around like, what is going on? And nobody's picking up the phone to call each other. We're all texting. And I said, you know, this is, I don't know, something's up here. And it's got to change, right?
We'll be back with much more after this.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
Yeah, like even the online dating, right? Like that's right. And I have admittedly
okay, you
never
got, you got
signed every, up for a dating website.
Three of the four guys are off the market, so we have no clue what you're talking yeah. about. With, no
okay,
idea.
So, and I have never signed up for it. I'm not on the sites. I don't do that. I
okay.
never have.
Yep.
Like I would imagine that's a, I mean, it's kind of like this impersonal thing versus actually seeing somebody in person, going to talk to them. And going from there, like it's almost like
when I,
it's not yeah. as it's not as nice as say Craigslist.
Right. You know, yeah. I am trying to add. And once again, I am being attacked publicly. This is. You know, I'm just going to shut up now.
But I think, Aaron, I think you're right, man. Like when I moved to California, I was I did Bumble or something, right? Twice. I think that you know everybody was what is Tinder and what is Bumble? And I said, okay, well, you know, this has got to be some sort of horrible online experiment that we're all forced to go through. And I did twice in it, and it, you know what? It's just not. It's not. It's just not right. You know what I mean? There's
everyone
just no
starts
way to,
out lying.
Yeah,
everyone's
starts out lying.
Everyone's
the picture,
lying.
Yeah,
everyone's lying.
The picture never, and mine included. You know what I mean? I'm you know, smart enough a man to, you know better or worse than anybody else. But I'm thinking, you know, we're both showing up, and she's looking at me like, well, you look nothing like you did in your picture, and I'm
yeah.
looking at her like, well, it's the same.
Yeah, you're
and
like,
then, you know,
excuse me, sir.
Right.
You clearly said.
Right. We split a steak dinner, and then you know, and that's that. But yeah, it the whole thing, man, the whole way we communicate and the way we get together and all that stuff is. You know, in my opinion,
I couldn't imagine dating today. I could not imagine dating today.
Oh, man.
I wouldn't make it. I would not make it. Like, as soon as they.
Everybody's catfishing everybody.
Yeah, well, not to mention, then you sit down for dinner, and the first thing they do is take a picture of their food.
Right.
I'd be like, man.
That's a red flag with me.
Yeah. You know, they take a picture of their food. And then they got to go, hold on, I got to blog real quick.
Because you know there's another guy out there that's looking at their social media and they're saying, well, I have to make sure that this guy knows I'm out to dinner with this guy or whatever it is or vice versa. It's not a male or female thing, but it's like, yeah, I mean, it's gotten pretty out of hand, you know, with the intention.
I couldn't imagine.
Who needs a picture of scattered smothered half browns?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, not all of us hang out at the Waffle House.
Late
at night. It's a great place for a first date. The food is always good. It's consistent, and you don't have to drop a lot of money because you may not like the person.
He's got it down to a science.
He does, especially when
unless it's
always nice when you're on Craigslist and the meeting place is a Waffle House. This is better than when Harry met Sally. Like this is the type of love story you tell your children about. Yeah.
I've never dated from Craigslist, never dated on anything.
I never said a word about dating, sir. Dating implies you saw him again.
You're right.
Okay,
you're
thank
right.
you. Speaking of
right.
never
I'm,
seeing again.
I'm still searching for the right woman. Sorry.
Yes, you are, and she's hiding from you.
Yes. I've only screwed up about three. I mean, completely screwed up about three, but hey.
Hey, waiting for their books to come out. They're going to be epic.
She's out there.
Oh, good. You know
she's
a publisher?
Out there.
She's out there and she's listening and going, I'm just going to hold back on that one.
On a side note, The Chinese food in Atlanta is not what I thought it would be. I was expecting.
Okay,
a little
first
better
of all, and this is laced with. I can't edit this. So, you go on a racist rant about Chinese food, Aaron. As a side note, I think that's the main. That's the main dish. What, pray tell, does the Asian cuisine that you're having in Atlanta is not the same as the one you used to get in Tampa? Is that basically what you're saying?
Or California?
Okay. Okay, you know what? Now, you're going to make this about race.
You did.
Where I am just describing type of food. Okay, if I said pizza, would that be against all the Italian-Americans out there?
If you would have said Italian pizza, yeah, probably. But you just – the way you said it just sounded, I don't know, mean.
Is that where you are okay, now,
how
Aaron?
How would you like me?
He just wants everyone to know he's on set. He's an actor.
No,
on the job in Atlanta.
Which is fine.
He went to an $8 Chinese food buffet, didn't tip, and is complaining. You are the cheapest human being on the planet.
Okay, have I never not tipped though? And that, be honest, I when it comes to myself, I don't spend money. In fact, you can tell the story of how you and Santino had to buy me.
We had to buy you a jacket. So you'd rather borrow everyone else's. Like, no, you are.
No, I just didn't wear one.
You are literally a work of art when it comes to finding ways to pinch penny. You know. Bobby Heenan was – Bobby Heenan, the great Bobby Heenan, rest his soul, was known for being cheap. He's got nothing on you. Nothing. You are the cheapest person.
When it comes to spending money on me, when it comes to others, I am very, very generous. I think I am. I mean, I bought my father a motorcycle. I have taken care of family members, some of which said that they pay me back, but those, you know, suckers going to be suckers.
Yeah, you're a regular charity right there. You're a walking, breathing charity you are.
Yes, and let's not
give me a break. Give me a break. I'm not believing any of this. You are a fountain of misinformation. Everything out of your mouth is, please. You probably have a GoFundMe.
That's part of Plan B, though. Save your money.
Yeah, yeah. Save your money. He won't have a problem with it because he spends everybody else's money.
There you go.
I did see a video of him reading the Bible once, which was very poetic.
Thank you, Trevor.
Yeah,
I was asked to do.
Yeah, yes, Aaron will do anything as long as there's a camera on him.
Bishop Robert Barron and his staff asked me to read the Easter Sunday reading and the Passion reading, and I gladly did it. It's actually the largest online Catholic ministry, and I was very honored to do it. And I did it for, guess what? Nothing, because that is me giving back. Who am I?
He looked very majestic with the one spotlight above him as he read the Bible. It was a very majestic sight, I will say that.
Trevor, you're using the big words today. Aaron was majestic. Yeah.
Well, when it comes to describing my physical appearance, I mean, what do you expect?
I wouldn't go that far, brother. Now, come on.
No. It's nothing. I'm just very symmetrical. That's all.
Yeah, especially between the ears. You're straight up and down. There's no depth to it.
Oh, how long have you been saving that one?
It just came to me. Pretty much every time I'm around you, a new disc just pops up. You'd be a great point guard in the NBA because all you do is throw them up and we all dunk them.
Hey, I'll be Muggsy.
You would pick Muggsy.
We're going to pick Stockton?
No. Let me ask you all this. So we had a big pay-per-view that just came down, and I guess, you know, everyone's talking about it. So Ric Flair is having his last match again. And, you know, because retirement in wrestling is, you know.
One of the most beautiful things about wrestling.
Yeah.
Is that you retire, but.
Yeah, no. Yeah. You know, the only one I think is really stuck. Nope. I was about to say Shawn Michaels. Nope.
Yeah.
Taker, so far.
I think he'll stay in the wings unless Vince needs, like, you know what I mean? You know,
yeah.
Vince.
Yeah.
He needs a
pull
name,
him out of the
like,
bullpen.
He'll pay the money.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But I think he'll hang out.
And I always kind of thought that was, you know, a little unfair to the, you know, maybe the mid-carders a little bit. I remember when I was in WWE, I was like, damn, he unretired again?
Yeah.
I was like, what am I? I said, well, back to the line for A-Rod, right?
Taker. Taker, obviously, he goes, I mean, he's synonymous with the success of the WWE.
Right.
You can't say WWE without saying Undertaker.
Yeah.
You know, maybe even more so than Hogan or, you know, The Rock.
For sure.
And all these other guys, but Taker has been a constant. The only one I would argue is Kane, but he didn't get quite the spotlight.
Right.
Kane's different to me because he did it. He never took any time off. So if I had to vote for who was the flagship, you know, I'd always kind of vote for Kane. But as far as box office, it's Taker, hands down. Doesn't matter who was in the ring with him. You're an instant star that night.
Yeah.
So to be on the other side of the ring against Taker was the lottery.
Yeah.
More so than Cena. And Cena's great. But to be at Mania against Taker in itself, regardless of the outcome, you're in the history books.
Yeah.
So, but having said that, it was annoying as fuck that he would be gone all year and come, and then all of a sudden all the TV time would go to Taker.
Yeah.
And again, he earned it. He earned it. But it when you're trying to come up and trying to get your spot, and there's not that many spots, and then everyone moves down a peg because Taker's coming back. It is frustrating, and you do find yourself going,
I figured, why don't I just retire?
Yeah,
and then come back.
Just retire. I retire right
instead
around.
Instead of trying to compete with the guys and retiring and coming back, I might as well just retire.
The funny thing is, though, if you walked out or I walked out and be like, well, the Funkasaurus, boys and girls, it's been a hell of a run.
Right.
I'm going to retire. My mic's not working. What's going on? Hey, guys, this is a moment. I'm about to take my boots off and leave them in the room. Me, okay.
Yeah.
Get out. All right. This is awkward. Yeah. So can I retire on SmackDown?
Bigger story with the comeback than hanging out if you're not needed.
Yeah. I mean,
they
what?
Just have guys down at NXT that mimic you now. That's the gimmick now, right? Like everybody, the guys that are reproducing seem to be a second generation of something that's already been there.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, and that's not, like, here's the deal. Like, and I don't put Funkasaurus up there with, but when you have a JYD or the American Dream or a certain character or a certain someone that does something and it's lightning in a bottle, and for whatever reason it didn't last as long as you wanted to, or you changed your mind with it, the machine thinks they can just recreate it.
Right.
And you can't. Yep. That's the one thing about wrestling, is you cannot recreate. You can make something new. You can borrow, it's like, you know, you can borrow something blue, something borrow, you know, whatever. You can take little things from different characters or greats and form it and make it your own and then produce it your way. That's the only way it works. You can't put a red tracksuit on a guy and say, okay, watch Funkasaurus videos and do it. Just like they couldn't tell me to watch a Dusty or a Vader or a Big John Studd or a King Kong Bundy and be like, okay, Brodus, do it, because that's them.
Right.
And I can't do them, but I can do me. Now, I can take things from it. Bundy's singlet, Big John Studd's work rate, you know, Dusty's charisma. So you can take little things and catch phrases. Like, Michael Hayes was a big influence on me when it came to promos and stuff, because he always said cool stuff on the fly.
Yeah.
So I think we're all, I mean.
Never meet your heroes.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you can. But Trevor.
Gotta maintain.
Took stuff with Harley, but he's not pretending to be Harley when he goes out there.
Yeah.
You know, he's Trevor. You know, and I said that one night when he was getting ready to go out for a match. He was about to get my Harley on. And I said, how about you get your Trevor on?
Yeah.
And then he kind of looked at me like,
me in my track.
Yeah, he was basically like, hey, f you, man. I'm trying to go wrestle. Like, what's the matter with you? You laid this on me.
That was real, though. I was like, damn, like, that was like, okay, like, cut me deep on that. But it was what I needed. You know what I mean? I needed to go out there and go, it's time to do you, Trevor. You've done paid your respects to everybody. You've done what you were supposed to. Now go get yours.
Yeah.
And man, again, that reverts back to that locker room, man. We've got there in the NWA, that unicorn that nobody else has, man. You've got a group of guys that just like are honest and upfront, not trying to hurt your feelings, not trying to cut you down, not trying to take anything away from you, trying to elevate you with honesty.
Right.
Yes.
And that kind of is where magic happens. That's where guys grow. That's where guys become the legends that we're talking about today.
Yeah.
Well, I need to come back out of retirement.
No, you don't. You're the one guy who doesn't.
What number retirement is this for you, Aaron? Or is this your
first one?
Okay, good. Yeah, nice.
Back to brass tacks. So we kind of got away from it. So what are your thoughts? We'll start with Trevor about Flair at 73 having another match.
You know, I think it's a good nostalgia thing, as long as everybody knows what they're coming to see. You know what I mean? Like, it's, you know, I guess I'm, you know, I'm happy for Rick that he still wants to go out there and give us one more match. But I think this is more for him than it is for us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I want to watch Ric Flair, you know, when he's, you know, I'll even go as late as in the 2000s. Rick was still, you know, still on point there. I wish him the best of luck, and I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of people come watch.
Okay.
But I don't know. I don't think we're going to get the Rick everybody's expecting.
Oh, I know we're not going to get it. And, you know, and I think, again, with all the respect in the world, he stayed in the game way too long.
Yeah.
And when you see this, there's, I always think about the handlers around everybody and how they're using this guy and they're just trying to drain that last drop out the turnip of money that they can get out of the name, you know? And so I always kind of look at it like, and that's just me. That'd be like, you know, if Terry Bradshaw said he was going to go play in another football game, you know, we love Terry Bradshaw, but I don't think anybody wants to see him throw a football right now.
Right.
You know, it's just,
or certainly get smoked, get hit.
Yeah. Or get hit. Anyway, yeah.
There's a safety thing, right? Yeah. Too, where you want to, well, you know, yeah.
Hold it right there. We'll be back in a bit.
Let me ask you this. Do you think this was a handler's idea, or do you think Rick, you know, knowing Rick, the, you know, like the amount of time we get to spend with him, like this came from Rick.
You know, it did. And that's when you have people around you to say no.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm reminded of Rocky, right?
Yeah.
Somewhere in a Rocky story where, you know, he might not have, shouldn't, maybe not, shouldn't have been in there. And it's, you know, maybe give the guy
but
a
Rocky
break.
Was a young man who was, who had nothing to lose and everything to gain.
Right.
Whereas, unless it's just a financial situation in which that breaks your heart because, you know, he's made millions in this industry, and you would like to see when guys are in their 70s that did this business that are okay, that are good. You don't want to see guys who are staying because, again, sometimes the misconception is because there's parts of this that are pre-laid out. It's simulated combat, and don't get it twisted. Yeah. You don't leave this sport the same as you walked in.
Right.
I don't care who you are. Mm-hmm. And yet, at some point, every one of us, some of us already starting, have to pay the bill. Right. You want to be a warrior. You want the glory. You're going to go out there and kill yourself every night for cheers. You're going to have to pay the bill.
Yeah.
And I've accepted that. I realize at some point all those bumps and all that – all those moments I'm going to have to pay for it.
Yeah, and you don't really notice it until you leave, right?
Yeah.
And then your body, and you go, whoa.
Yep.
Everything that people were telling me about this is real. And I am beat up, you know, and 100%.
The average fight lasts about 3.5 seconds.
Right.
And you're fighting every night for 12 minutes.
Yep.
So boxers, the same thing. And there's a price to be paid. So, you know, and you just hope. I hope that he's safe. I hope it goes. I just on principle. I'm good for them. They're gonna make money and all that kind of stuff. But I when I watch Ric Flair, I watch when he was in the Horseman and he was feuding with Dusty. That's the Ric Flair I like to remember. And again, this is just my who cares what I think. But you know, I got good core people around me. And honestly, even when I started making my comeback, you know, Trevor was like, I didn't really like the way you were moving. You know, the pandemic, I was sitting around, I was sluggish. I had put on too much weight and I had to get down and everything. And you know, I appreciate the fact that Aaron and Trevor were like, well, we were a little worried about your first match because you looked just rusty and off a little bit. But, you know, you got your ass in gear and you – because if I couldn't, if my friends are like, hey, man, that's the third match where you just don't – you know, at some point you have to – accept what everyone else is thinking,
right?
You know, and that's the hard thing as an athlete because you got to have it from your corner. You got to have good people around you, and you know, someone who says, "Hey, I love you," but you can't do this anymore. It's over,
right? And those are the people that really love you, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You
know, not the guy who's like,
"Love me." Are you gonna
one
love
more
me
match, A-Rod? Right. One more match.
Are you
brother?
Gonna love me if I'm not out there wrestling?
Right.
That's the question. Know, because the line does get blurred.
Yes.
You know, and it's nobody's a circus animal. Nobody's out there, you know, whatever people are thinking, right? I mean, it's a profession and it's a job and it's a chosen thing and there's a sacrifice that's going to be made. But, you know, that's true. You know, I want people to love me as Kevin Kiley Jr.
Yeah.
Right.
Not like, hey, you're not in the biz, Bruce,
right.
So I couldn't talk to you. And
there's a lot exactly. of that. Yep.
And that's why I'm so glad we have our guest. I will always call him Arilla. You know, everybody has a bunch of different names, but most everybody knows him as Rob or Robert. Is Rob with us?
Yeah, I'm here, man.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Hey,
you're on with me, Kevin Kiley, Aaron. You know him and Trevor. So you have one of the best, I think, post wrestling stories. And now we were together at FCW. You and I were once a tag team. We were Arilla and G-Rilla. And, you know, Kevin remembers one of your raps that you did in promos. Like, you were one of the best promo guys that I think I had ever worked with. And that's saying a lot. But you never got enough. You were always creative. You always came up. I mean, we did so much crazy stuff. I mean, this guy was literally doing Crocodile Hunter stuff. Like, he was just funny. You're not a small guy at all, but you were a hybrid because you could do power stuff with the big guys, but then at the same time, you could go with the smaller guys and the luchador stuff. So for a lot of the fans who don't know you, they're getting to know you for the first time, I figured give you the floor, tell your story a little bit, and then the rest will just ask you some questions or whatever, if that's cool, and we'll just go absolutely. From there.
Yeah, so for the people that don't know, Robert Anthony, Egotistico Fantastico in some circles, I've been wrestling on the independents for about 20 years now. And much like everyone here, this is all I ever wanted to do. When I got into training, I didn't have a backup plan because I always thought, you know, this is what I was going to do, and I was going to do anything I could to make it. And just like Trevor, I went to Harley's camp and spent some time in Eldon, Missouri. Right when he left, right when he got signed to the WWE is when I got to Harley's, and pretty much did everything I can to get to developmental. And after developmental, kind of made my name on the indie scene from there, you know. But Rilla mentioned about me cutting promos and doing everything. I don't know if it's good or bad, but Billy Kidman used to say I reminded him of Disco Inferno. Whether I came up with a good or a bad idea, I always had a f-ing idea.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, no, kid, yeah, your little Disco had some wild ideas. Oh man, yeah, but
yes, no.
But that's one of the things, though. You know, anybody great, right? You throw everything against the wall, right? All the ideas, sure. You throw them all against the wall, and you see what sticks, and you keep doing it. And some of them may be crazy, right? But that's art. You know, and I always was massively entertained by you, man. I thought you were amazing.
No, I appreciate it. Yeah. I was there when Kevin first showed up. I was right. There for his very first bump.
Yeah, I remember that.
It's pretty crazy.
Correct me if I'm wrong. You were rapping Hippopotamus, My Rhymes Are Bottomless, right? Did you do that?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember sitting here. I was like, this dude's awesome. A genius. Yeah, no, that was great.
You know what it is? Before I got signed, it would be I had a mask, and I was Egotistico Fantastico on the indies. And I remember Bill DeMont telling me before I got to Deep South, we talked on the phone and he said, hey, man, this isn't going to fly. And you got to think of something else. So I was kind of lost once I took the mask off because I didn't know who I was as Robert Anthony.
Right.
I didn't understand who I was until I got fired, actually. And I spent... I started wrestling. Yeah, I know. I started wrestling in the year 2000, and it took me about 4 or 5 years to get to developmental. And for 4 or 5 years, I was this mask character. And once I got it taken off, I was already in that system of you have Kofi Kingston, who I thought at the time had a genius thing.
Yeah. I thought
and
so too.
Everyone else seemed to have their footing. And I thought, even though I had 5 years in, I was starting at zero. So I was really lost. I was really confused. So I came up with all these different ideas just to see if something would stick. But unfortunately for me, that's kind of where my story ended, because we went from Deep South in McDonough, Georgia, to going to Tampa, Florida, to wrestling at Hitmasters or training at Hitmasters, the batting cages, then to the food warehouse, which turned into FCW, while we're wrestling at the biker rally, the flea market, all that kind of stuff. And I never had that time to figure out who I was and develop, because we were like gypsies.
Yeah.
You know?
Bro, I remember that. It was like a food warehouse, right? When we first got there to FCW. Yeah, I didn't mean to cut you off. Yeah.
No, it's fine. So like, for a while, and I don't know if we're going to jump ahead, if I'm jumping ahead, when I got let go, I was number one depressed. I was bitter. I thought the system failed me because I always said I was at developmental, didn't have a chance to develop, you know? So I went for a real long time where I hated wrestling, even to the point where I met my wife who loved wrestling, and she would say, hey, let's go, Raw's in town, let's go to Raw. I'm like, I'm not going to see my next girlfriend. that.
Yeah, you know, hey, I mean, you're not alone with that. I think everyone goes through that, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone does.
Yeah, you can't watch it for a while, right?
No.
You know, you have to completely, yeah.
And I think
I still don't watch it.
Yeah.
We're being honest. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, you're not on it. Aaron's not watching nothing he's not on. So yeah.
Hey, we always speak the truth, damn it.
For me, I think my story is a little bit different from everyone here because my story began and ended in developmental. Everyone here made it on TV, got an action figure, had that on the road experience. You know what I mean? I think I have a different view and a different mindset when it comes to getting signed and getting fired. Right. So when I got let go, it wasn't celebrated like it is now. Like a lot of those kids from NXT, when they get let go, it gets celebrated. They go on this really good indie run. They have a little bit of a name because NXT is a TV product. But back then when we were all there, except for Trevor, because Trevor went straight to TV. But nobody knew we were there. You know what I mean? It was like this hidden thing. Unless you were like really deep into professional wrestling, then you found those tapes or knew who was in developmental. So when I got let go, I was 26-ish or going on 27. And I moved back to my mother's basement and I hit this big wall of depression. Like I made no money. I didn't make a name for myself. Now I'm going back to Chicago where I started, you know, working the same Midwest local indies. And all my friends are either married or buying houses and things like that. And I'm back living with my mom. So it took a while for me to get back on my feet. And luckily, I credit my mother with this because she said when I got fired, I was in Tampa and I called her and I cried because like that was my dream and it was gone. I wasn't happy. I know a lot of guys say I'm so happy when I got fired.
None of them are happy. None of them are happy. No one's happy.
They say they are.
Yeah, they're full of shit.
I remember
every one of us died inside when we got that phone call. I'm telling you that right now.
I'm gonna bury Trevor knows him and Rilla knows him, Keith Walker and Bradley J. So when I got let go, I cried to my mom. She told me to come home. And she's like, you're coming home. We'll figure this out. And I remember being in a locker room in Chicago with Brad and Keith, and they were holding court with all the young guys like, oh, man, we're so happy we got fired, blah, blah, blah. And I was across the room going, man, what the f- are you guys talking about? I cried my eyes out when I got fired. I just called it out.
But that's you, though. Sacks. That's who you are. All.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody celebrated.
I didn't celebrate. I was
I mean, what you can hate the business or you can blame it or whatever, but you got there because you loved it.
Yep.
And just like anything else, when something you love says, I don't want to be with you anymore, whether it's a woman or a business or a sport, there's a mourning process. And if you don't have one, you're going to have one or it's going to affect the rest of your life. So probably you were the most healthiest out of all of us because you mourned it immediately. I walked around with a chip on my shoulder forever. And if someone even asked me if I wrestled, I said I didn't.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, I don't watch that. Like I was heartbroken, you know, and because my first time I didn't make TV either. Our Robert and I were a tag team and it seemed like everything we did, every idea we came up with was just wrong. I think a lot of that was just unfortunately Robert got stuck with residual heat because we were Deep South guys. And when there's a new regime, it's like the mafia. Yeah. Yep. They want their guys in there, and they want everybody out. And I think we just kind of were.
Yeah, got caught in that change of ownership.
We had one cool idea. Everyone was doing gimmicks. Robert was going to put powder in my hand, and then slap the guy. And so we did it, you know. And then Kern's like, "Oh, that's a disqualification." I was like, "Wait a minute, what?"
Right.
Like guys are doing all kinds of silly, you know. So you kind of knew,
or like a coaching change, right? Yeah, in sports, they want their guys, It doesn't matter.
100%. Yeah. Yep. So. But no, man, I commend you for that and being real about that because there's so many guys that were lying and then they're the same guys that you see they're wrestling for. You'll see them at a show for $50 selling gimmicks at a table and nobody's walking by it. You can't tell me that's better.
Yeah.
It's not.
It was tough for me. And I went through a giant weight loss too because like when you're depressed – even though I was lifting, I wasn't eating. I really wasn't taking care of myself health-wise. Because I think when I got when I got let go, I was about 225. And by the time 3 months after I was fired, I was shy under 200 pounds. And, and that's what the depression does. It at least for me, you know what I mean? I stopped eating well. My workouts were lazy. I didn't understand what was next. And for me, my mom said, "You have no option. You're going to school." And I said, "I don't know what I'm going to school for," because I prepared my whole life to do this wrestling thing. And she said, "Well, you need to figure it out." So I kind of just sat down and I said, you know, what do I like? What can I be capable of doing? And before I got signed, I was a personal trainer, as a lot of the boys kind of fall into that as well, that whole gym job kind of deal. And I said, what's stable that I could kind of do? And I thought about it real hard, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to try to be a teacher, and I'm going to be a gym teacher. That's what I'm going to go for. So I found a local college that I didn't have to move to or anything like that. And I went to school, and then, you know, I did the whole teaching route. That was my next step in life, to kind of figure out this whole thing that is after WWE. What do?
You know? Right.
Would you try it? So, would you wrestle again, Robert? Would you try it? See, there's so much wrestling out there now, you know?
So here's the thing. I never stopped, right?
Okay.
So when I got let go, not many people know this, I'm going to bury myself now, but it's a funny story. So I got let go on a Tuesday or Wednesday, and by that Friday, I was wrestling for FIP in Florida. And then after the show, I drove to Louisville to stay with Colt Cabana as my like halfway stop till Chicago. And when I got to Louisville, Colt's like, "Hey, do you want to wrestle on OVW TV?" I said, "Absolutely." So I had my mask. I put my mask on literally 4 days from being fired, wrestled Colt on OVW TV, and then went home. So once I got home, I enrolled in college, but I was still doing the indies because it was still in my blood. I still kind of wanted to see what was next. And at this time, 2009-ish, indies were not as hot as they are now, you know?
Not even so close.
No, not even close. So I did a lot of local Midwest stuff, and then I got hooked up with CZW out in Philadelphia. And when I did CZW is kind of when I made my independent name, right? Yeah. And did a lot of good stuff out in Philly. That's where Ambrose, John Moxley, and I met. He was in Ohio at the time. And the way that this would work was CZW would rent a van in Chicago. And what I would do was pick up the van, pick up some guys in Indianapolis, pick up Mox in Ohio, and then we'd go to Philadelphia, 12 hours one way, wrestle, come on back. I did that for 4 years until Mox got signed, and then the kind of band just kind of disbanded a little bit. And I floated around for a few years, but never stopped wrestling, right?
Yeah.
as Robert Anthony. And then most recently, and I'll tell the story. So I became a teacher. I was going to school, became a teacher in about 2012. I did all the classes, busted my ass to do that. Got a job. And I was teaching for a year when I randomly got a call from someone in the office at WWE. And they said, "Hey, do you want to be an extra in Milwaukee, Wisconsin?" And at this point, it was right on summer break of my first year teaching. And I said, "You know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to go there
just to collect
a payday and just to goof around, just see who I know." And and Mox was on the road at this time. So I felt comfortable that I knew people there, and I wouldn't feel like an a**. So I went, and I had a match with Ricardo Rodriguez before the doors when they used to do that. And I remember it was like a curtain sellout. Seth Rollins, who I had his first independent match as Tyler Black, was there. Sheamus and all them were there, and they knew me from Developmental, so they wanted to watch it. And I went in there with, "I don't give a f**k" attitude. So a lot of those guys that had those little matches were kind of just doing, you know, the basics. And I went in there and I was really stiff, really hard, and talking a lot of shit during the match. And Regal gave me a look, and I was like, "Oh man, I think I f***ed up." So I rolled out, and he came over to me. He goes, "Hey, in a few minutes, I want you to come to this room and cut a promo." So I said, "Okay, cool." So when I went to do this promo, I still had, I didn't give a f- attitude, and I didn't cut a promo, the typical wrestling promo. I just gave him 1 minute rundown of my life after getting fired and how I felt and the anger that I had. And he kind of sat me down and he goes, I'm going to bring you to the performance center and I'll give you a couple day trial at the performance center if you want it. And I said, well, when is it going to be around? And it was again around one of my breaks from teaching. So I said, you know what? It. I'm going to do it. I'm going to collect this payday and see what's going on. So they sent me to the performance center for a couple days. There's 70 other guys trying out. Bill Lamont is there at the time. And Bill was Rilla and myself's trainer in Deep South. So we go there. I do the tryout. At the end of the tryout, Regal comes up to me and he goes, all right, so I got to ask you a question. He goes, do you want to be here or do you like the idea of being here? And I didn't understand. I said, I don't understand the question. He goes, well, let me tell you something else then. He goes, you've done something, because he knew my story. He goes, you've done something that not many people can do once they leave here. You survived. And you survived it in your own way. And that hit me real hard in the chest, because I was like, man, I did survive. I crawled out of so much shit after getting fired and feeling like a nobody at almost 30 years old. And got a job with a pension, health insurance. I just bought a house at the time. Life was looking good. And my wife, who doesn't know the strength of the business, she just knows from what she sees on TV. I told Regal, I got to think about this. He goes, all right, think about it, because you have a decision to make. You could come to the performance center or don't, but just know what might happen again. And I was like, oh, so I left Orlando, went home, talked to my wife, and she's like, all right, well, you're going to go to the performance center. You're going to sign, right? I'm like, man, you don't understand that life. I'm like, what we have now is very stable, and it's going to be there for as long as I want it. If I go back, it's not stable, and it could be taken away from me without me having any say in it. And so we talked about it, and I decided that, you know, that wasn't what I was going to do. My life as a WWE signed contract wrestler ended in 2013 because I decided that it ended. I decided that what I was doing now was better for myself and the family that I was building than to take a chance to possibly make, what, 100 grand starting out on the road? And when I was teaching in the city at the time, I was making about 60,000. So I broke down my wife and go, after I pay my own health insurance, after I take out my own taxes, after I take out all these expenses, I'm still at square one.
With, wow.
You know what I mean? Yep. So,
you know,
so
what?
I broke it down to her that way, you know?
You know, it's funny how life sometimes you don't think you learn things and then it kind of echoes. So, you and I both, I think you got fired first. I got fired after you. I might've been the same day. I don't even remember anymore. Seems like it was yesterday. So just curious, who fired you, just for
Ty Bailey.
Okay, cool.
Ty Bailey.
So you're with me. All right, yeah. Trevor's safe. Trevor's safe because Trevor was hired and fired by John Laurinaitis.
Yeah. I was a second level.
No, yes. But I would just I digress because this is important. So when I was with Snoop and I came back and John said, you know, basically that we made a mistake and we want to bring you back, basically is what he said. You know, I had to make that same decision. And at that time I was married. I had a nice house. I had a great paying job with Snoop. We had dogs, garden, we had a life, and I went the other way with it.
Yeah.
And which ended unfortunately in a divorce. Listen, I love my life now and I love, that time I traded my family for to chase the dream.
Right.
And it just so happened that it blew up into other things. But looking at who made the best decision, mine was luck. You know what I'm saying? And you made probably the bravest decision that I've ever heard of. Because most of us aren't that strong. I wasn't, you know.
I don't think I would have been if they would have ever.
No, no, you know. So
I don't think I would have.
So
it was.
No, and let's be honest. I can't do the real world. I'm incapable of it.
I didn't even ask you, you know, Kevin.
Exactly, and I appreciate that. But
we knew 1,000%. As soon as they called you, like, yes, I'm in. What time is the plane leaving? I need 15 minutes.
Invisible man.
Yeah. Yeah. We weren't offering you a job. We were just wishing you happy birthday.
Yeah. And I think, too, Robert.
Yeah, I never got the happy birthday text. So that kind of, I knew it was something when they called. I haven't spoken to them since I left.
When you had to make that decision, Robert, there was one place to wrestle. You know what I mean? Right? I believe it was just WWE. You know, and that
TNA was there too.
I was there, bro, but you weren't going to make that much money. There was one for the money you were talking about, the sacrifice. Yeah. Right. There is only one place.
Yeah.
Well, it puts a lot like on your mental sanity. Like you decided to choose your mental health and your happiness and what was more important for your family. And that's
you know why? And you know why? Because you cried the day you got fired.
Yep.
It was a tough decision to make because we're fans, and there again, for me, there still is unfinished business, but I'm at peace with it. Like I wanted that action figure. I wanted to be a champion. I wanted to be on TV. I wanted to be on a pay-per-view chair or a poster or things like that because I grew up and saw the Ultimate Warrior and do it. So when I made that decision, I knew that I was thinking of the family that I was starting. My wife was, she either was pregnant or we already had our son by the time that this happened. And I wasn't going to put them in a position of that nomad life for me. I gave it up, you know. Yeah. And I was, at the time, I was pretty happy with my independent run. And I decided that I was going to quit. After I told them no, I said to myself, all right, well, if I'm saying no to the highest level, then why am I still doing it on this small level? And I decided, you know what, I'm gonna quit. And I believe I gave it up for about 3 or so months, and John Cohn called me. And this is where I got this new life where I got to do stuff that I never would have done if it wasn't for this last opportunity. So John Cohn called me and he said, hey, we're going to be in Chicago. We need a guy to wrestle Velveteen Dream. And you're the only one that I know. And this is when NXT wasn't bringing a giant road crew. Right. He goes, you're the only guy I know in the area that I could trust. So I said, you know what? Again, good attitude. Absolutely, let's go. Because now I get to wrestle in the Allstate Arena, which was Rosemont Horizon, where I seen everyone wrestle. Never got to wrestle that before. And I'm getting a guaranteed match, and I'm going to check that off my bucket list. So when I went and wrestled on that NXT show, gave me an entrance, which blew my mind, because I thought I was going to get the jobber entrance where I go through the side with the referee.
Hey, listen, that's an over. You know what? That's a respectable entrance. That's a respectable entrance, sir. Yeah.
We've all had that entrance.
Yeah, we've all had that entrance.
Hey, at this point.
Okay. All right. You were doing great. You were doing so great. Now you done f***ed everything up. Now I'm pissed. Like, sir, did you have to leave? And I suppose you got to go back through Gorilla when you were done, too. Some of us didn't get that.
I did.
Yeah, some of us, they said, go side. Yeah. There's nothing left to be said here today.
No, most of the times, I just appeared on TV somehow.
Yeah, just magically. Yeah, just like, hey.
I was standing there.
Bro. Yeah. So they took care of me that day. And it gave me this life of like, hey, you know what? This could be my side hustle. This could be.
You made wrestling your side chick. Side. How dare you?
Yeah, I did.
How
at least at this level.
Well, it deserved it at the time, right?
Yeah. Well, you know what?
It did.
Yet again, the Godfather is no longer the greatest wrestler of all time. It's R. Rilla. Because, again, he did it his way. So, what have we learned today, fellas? Man.
Getting fired is good sometimes.
Yeah, if you're a man about it, not a little bitch like most of us were, who were like, I'm fine. I didn't need them anyway. I'll show you. Oh, did somebody call? 203 number call?
I've learned this. If you are my friend out there, I want a phone call.
Yeah.
I want no text messages anymore.
You call, Kevin.
Call Kevin Kiley Jr.
Jr.
on the phone.
You say hello.
Yes.
I'm
taking it back. We got to reverse this whole thing.
Hey, Rob, I hope you will be a reoccurring guest, man.
No worries.
Yeah, finally, we got a guest that, Godfather was good. It was just that one name that we will never mention. That's guy.
That's going to be the running joke for this whole rest of this podcast.
Yeah, running joke.
I don't think it was him. It was so much.
Okay, you weren't there. You have no station. You have nothing to say on this. You were working.
The show wasn't as good.
You remember you were working. Oh, I'd love to, but I got a thing. I have a thing.
I just remember. Let's be honest. Do something. Yes. Do something.
Well, we didn't have to do anything today.
The show wasn't as good. Don't blame him.
Okay. All right. You're probably wearing your trunks right now while you're talking to us.
You're not
the
exactly
greats all. Never come out of character.
They never,
Aaron.
Never
they
break
do
character.
Not. They
he doesn't
strong.
Break. He doesn't break character until 5 days after the DVD release. Yeah, he's legit. Right. So, all right, man.
Hey, babe is real, boys.
For more podcasts like this, just like this, you can check us out at foxnewspodcast.com. This has been the Three Wise Men, and we're like five deep. Rob, Kevin, Trevor, and Aaron. Tyrus, enough said.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.